Hey, everyone, and welcome to the New Visionary Podcast, a podcast for artists who are ready to reach greater heights in their art careers. I'm your host, Victoria J. Fry, founder of Visionary Art Collective and New Visionary Magazine. Join me for inspiring conversations with some of the most inspirational visionaries in today's art world. Let's jump in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the New Visionary Podcast. Today, we have the pleasure of chatting with Shweta Bist, a New York City-based photographer focusing on the psychological experience of being a mother. Shweta, welcome. Welcome, welcome.
Hi, Victoria. It's so great to be here and talking to you. I'm so excited.
Me too. I'm so excited to have you on. And even before we started recording, we were having such a beautiful conversation about reclaiming time for ourselves, pouring back into ourselves, what that might look like on a day-to-day basis, and ultimately the importance of taking time to center yourself, especially at the start of the day and especially during really busy seasons. We are recording this episode at the beginning of March 2024. So I can already start to feel the spring energy. It's a lot of energy.
It's showtime.
Yeah, it's showtime. And so we were just chatting like about what's been helpful for us. And Shweta, you shared some really great thoughts on this. And I'd love to just hear what's helpful for you and share that with our listeners.
Yeah, well, daily routine. I take my dog, Penny. She's a boxer, super cute, super silly, for a walk in the morning in the park. And I love watching her run free. It's like, you know, that's me running free right there, playing with all the other dogs. And after that, we come home. I have my coffee while writing my morning notes. I journal every day. I have to do these things before I settle down into my day, because if I don't, then it's a massive jumble up in my head and nothing seems to work or streamline. You know, I have tried doing it. Like, I have tried jumping straight into my day, but it's really very unhealthy. After a couple of days, it just, everything goes poof. So yeah, that works for me. I also exercise. I try to exercise 3 times a week, if not, you know, more. And I swim and I bike ride. These days it's cold and rainy, so swimming. And for me, finding that time to have flow, you know, flow through something is very essential to me being able to be creative, honestly. I get really caught up in my own head because I think so much. And if I don't work out, I feel extremely blocked. So and of course go to museums, but that's not often, of course. But what I do more often is really these things to keep it going.
Thank you for sharing that. I mean, as we were saying before, it is truly those day-to-day strategies and knowing also that a routine might not look the same every day, but it's like, if you have those strategies, those things that are helpful for grounding you and centering you and just helping you to feel good, strengthening your mindset, like it is so foundational to your day. I also have tried just jumping in, and some days, honestly, if I have like an early meeting or something where it's basically jumping out of bed and going to the computer, although it's very, very rare that I do that these days. Almost never happens because I just know I'm not going to feel good if I do that. But then, you know, it's like a matter of finding other ways that you can kind of recalibrate and recenter throughout the day. But yeah, taking walks in the morning, if you can. You know, another thing I remind myself, and we were chatting a little bit about this, is you don't always need hours. If I can put aside, and I try to do this every day, about an hour, hour and a half in the morning to stretch and walk and do my affirmations and all of that good stuff that I know is going to help me to feel so good and change my energy for the rest of the day, then I will. But if that's not possible, it's amazing how even just a walk around the block, like a 5-minute walk just to reset, it's like pushing that reset button, can also make such a difference.
I mean, absolutely. Deep breathing. There are times that I don't have time at all, and all I do is just sit on the ground and take deep breaths, and sometimes I chant Om because it helps me breathe. Because, you know, when you're anxious, you can't breathe. And I feel like putting a word to it helps kind of, you know, motivate you to do that exercise. And my daughters will often catch me in the middle of doing this, and they'll nod their heads. I was like, what is wrong with you, Mama? But it's like, come sit and do it. Come and sit and do this with me, I'll say to them. And they'd be like, no, thank you very much. But yeah, just like taking a few minutes to take three deep breaths. And I feel like, boom, okay, I can do this. I can take on the next hour.
Yes. It's very simple but powerful and effective strategies. And sometimes I fall into the habit of, or like, you know, I'll do everything in the morning and then I think I'm good for the rest of the day. But then there are so many times where in the afternoon, in the evening, I'm like, okay, I'm feeling my breathing is getting off. I can feel myself getting anxious. I need to pause for 5 minutes and, like, you know, breathe or stretch or just go for a walk around the block. Sometimes it's like, and I've spoken about this in recent episodes, but some days it's multiple times throughout the day, and it's just really tuning in and being aware of, like, what you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I think you just have to take a moment when you need to take a moment, right? That's essentially what it is. Yeah. And yeah, you have to give your body what it's asking for. Essentially, that's right. What I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of this is preventative. I mean, we spoke a little bit also about burnout, and burnout is such a real thing. Like, there have been times in my life where I thought I was really sick for a few weeks. And looking back, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my gosh, no, I was just really burnt out. But I thought I was, mm-hmm. because it's kind of the same. You feel physically, you know, ill sometimes when you've been going too hard for too long.
Yeah. And I think all of us, like, each of us has a different way of how it manifests burnout. Mm-hmm. For me, I feel it in my body. My hips get tight. My back starts to go out. I mean, this was happening to me a couple of years ago. Every few months, I would throw my back out that I wouldn't be able to get out of bed. I was immobilized. And it was a serious conversation with myself that I had to have. I'm like, this is not in my body. It's happening psychologically in my mind. And I had to slow down. The world we live in expects a lot from us. And I'm not trying to push the blame on the external world, but it's true. We live in a time of so much information that's coming at us from so many places, so much. I feel like as women, anyway, we have so much pinned on us. And then if you're mothers, that is a different story. And we're constantly, it's like we're hamsters in a wheel. But I think that to recognize that and to say, no, I'm going to take my time and I'm going to stop and pause and do this my way. I think that is an act of resistance. Like you mentioned, we talked about this, and, you know, this, we have defying capitalism and saying, no, I'm not going to do this. Yeah,
it's an act of resistance, absolutely. And also, you know, it's an act of self-love and self-preservation. Mm-hmm. And it's empowering. It's the word reclaiming is, like, resonating so much with me lately, like reclaiming. And I'm not a mother, so I don't even have that experience. I can only imagine how important it is to reclaim your time when you're a mom and you're caring, your caregiver, you're caring for your children. And yeah, it's important. And it doesn't have to, it can look like so many things. But one thing that I'm really dialing into lately, when I feel like my to-do list is just absolutely overflowing, is going through that to-do list in the morning, accepting that there's no way I can get everything done, but what are the priorities? And I will literally go through the list and circle and underline, like, maybe three things that I can get to that day in between meetings and sessions and that kind of thing. And just focusing on those, you know, what are the most important things on this list that I realistically can take on today? And everything else, it's going to have to wait. And that's okay. I think there's, like, a level of acceptance with this as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny you say that, because I do exactly the same thing. I write everything down and then I'm, like, looking at it and I'm like, okay, this is an impossible list. there's no way all of this is happening today. So I give myself grace. Like, okay, maybe we do it like this, you know, go about doing these things first and then leave the rest for later. And over time, I have learned to forgive myself for the things that I crossed out on my list, because it gets done. It's just that it takes longer. And I've realized that this gig we're in, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I've had to, there are days, don't get me wrong, when I'm like hyperventilating and thinking that I have no time, time's running out, and all of these things. But then in quieter moments, I know that I'm in this for the long haul, and it's going to take time. And all I need to do is breathe and stop to wonder every day. Look at the things around me that I have, be grateful, and still have excitement when I see something that's beautiful or wondrous and say, oh my God, this is just so amazing.
Those are the most beautiful moments, and those are the most powerful moments. And like, it's reminding yourself, even when things feel overwhelming or unmanageable or out of our control, we can still find moments of beauty. We can still find joy. It's not easy, but like, if we make a sincere effort to slow down and to notice those things, like, we can. And it does take an active effort. You know, I've spoken about my journey navigating life with anxiety and what that looks like. And some days it's really easy to find joy and you just feel happy all day. And other days it's like, okay, I need to actively like make an effort to slow myself down and find ways that I can tap into joy or excitement or just feeling okay, you know? And it's different, but I think you said giving yourself grace, and I think that is like the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, absolutely. I think that we're hard on ourselves. We've been trained, a lot of us. I don't know about you, but I was raised in an environment where there was a lot that was expected from me, because essentially I keep bringing this back to it, but it is what it is, that I'm a girl. I was a girl. And there are these things that happen, the environment that, you know, force, you know, it's not that people are saying something to you. I was raised thinking that I'm equal in every way to, you know, my brother or the men around me, that with all the women were the same, but it's not that really. And I think that there is a certain sense of where people are always at you, putting pressure on you to be a certain way. And then you know that there is an expectation for you to be a certain way in the world, basically. And I think that when you're not performing, then it feels like you're off the mark. And when you rest, you feel guilty. We talked about this. So I think that it's very important to then relearn and say, okay, no, I deserve this. I deserve rest. And, you know, when I became a mother, I thought it's my responsibility to take care of everyone and everything, and even the feelings and emotions of everybody in my house. And it's a very difficult way to live, where you feel responsible for everybody's successes and failures. And it's not true. Your children will be what they want to be eventually one day. And you cannot pin all of their successes and failures on yourself, because they're influenced by so many things. Friends, environment, school, teachers, so much is happening that is beyond your control. But we somehow find a way to track it back to ourselves. And I think I've had to learn to let that go and say, no, this is not, I'm going to do what I can. And that's it. And then it's up to the world. It's up to the, you know, it's up. Everybody's responsible for their own joy. And we are responsible for our own. And so definitely give yourself grace. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. I love how you worded that. And I think it's so beautiful that you had, like, you came to that moment where you realized it's not sustainable for me to take on all of these emotions. And I can't imagine, like, again, I'm not a mom, but I can, like, just trying to envision and put myself in those shoes of feeling like I am responsible for my family and my kids. And I can't even imagine even just being responsible for my own emotions, okay, is a lot on a day-to-day basis. Like, that's a full-time job. Managing like how I feel is a full-time job. So I can't imagine. But, you know, I saw something on social media a couple of days ago, and I'm actually planning to like either print this out or write it down and pin it up around my apartment in a really visible place, which, and it was a quote that said, sometimes rest is the most productive thing. And it just hit me.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm going to paste that on top of my desk to remind me every day.
Totally. Because we have this like very binary way of thinking that's like rest is not productive. Working is productive. And it's like, actually, no, rest, it's like we're saying, it's an investment in everything else that we're doing. Like taking that hour or taking that 5 minutes or those three deep breaths is actually going to make everything better and more manageable. And, you know, I don't know, it just really resonated. So,
Yeah, no, agree.
Well, we were having such an amazing conversation. And like, I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts on this, because I think this is such a, I don't know, it's just the time of year going into March, going into the spring, there's such a burst of energy. And it's, these are important reminders. But I am so excited to have you here and to learn more about your journey as a visual artist, as a photographer. There's so many questions I have for you, but really I'd love to start by having you just tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, the experiences that have ultimately shaped your journey as a visual artist.
Yeah, I mean, earlier I thought, you know, it's been a long journey and I'm a late bloomer. It's like, I'm 40, I'm going to be, and I have no qualms sharing this, I'm going to be 44 this year. And I'm like, wow, I finally know what I want in my life. But yeah, what's late, what's early? I guess it's a matter of perspective. And, you know, I didn't come to this from the beginning. And I started my professional life in, you know, with banking. And then I sold insurance for a while. And all of this was just very joyless for me and didn't make sense. So before I switched my third job, which was again working with a multinational corporation in Delhi, I was like, I don't want to do this. Something popped in my head and I was like, why am I doing this? This is like so not who I am. And I wanted to work in textiles at that time, and I was very curious about making clothes. So I applied to a school in Delhi. It's called National Institute of Fashion Technology. It's one of the more well-regarded fashion schools in Delhi. And I joined them for their one-year certificate program in garment merchandising. At the same time, I started working with my father, who then had a business of manufacturing and exporting home furnishings. And he wanted to develop this business and wanted to also include garments. So I said, okay, do you want me to work with you? He goes, yeah. And well, how better to, you know, help your family? And it was great because I got married at that point. And in India, I don't know if you're familiar, but you live with your parents, and then when you get married, you go and live with your husband and his parents traditionally. And this way I would get to be close to my family. So I said, okay. So for about a year I worked and I studied, and I really enjoyed it. I was merchandising for the business, and I did that for another year. And then my husband got a job in Dubai. And do we want to move? My whole life I was in Delhi. I was like a, you know, a little frog in a pond. I didn't want to leave. But this was an opportunity to see, to experience life outside of, you know, the confines of you know, home and family and our rigorous customs and traditions. And Delhi was getting extremely polluted and always was unsafe. I mean, I always felt under threat. Let's try this. So we moved to Dubai, and I still continue to work in the same, you know, sector. And I quit when my daughter is born because I don't get enough maternity leave. And this is long, grueling, you know, 9 to 7 p.m. job. And I want to stay with my daughter. But I by this time, I've already bought my first camera. And because I wanted to document life in abroad. And I'm hooked. Like, it's a disease almost. And I want to take pictures all the time. So I continue doing this. And I love it. And I fantasize that one day I'll be a photographer. It's just a fantasy, of course, because I'm a merchandiser and I'm going to go back to doing this thing. And then my younger one is born and we move to New York because we get another job offer, which my husband gets another job offer. So we move here in 2013 and I'm home with the kids and totally out of my zone. It's, I didn't realize it then, but after a very long time, maybe a couple of years when I went for a checkup to the doctor, for palpitations that I was having, he ran a battery of tests and then concluded that it's nothing and proposed to me that maybe I have anxiety and maybe I'm depressed. And I said, no, it can't be. It took me a while to come to accept that I was not okay. And also, what happened in the meanwhile was I put the camera away for a little while because it seemed that when I was with the camera, I was not with the family. And this was pointed out to me and I felt that immense mother guilt. I was like, oh no, I'm not being a good mom. I need to focus more on the kids and my husband. And so I did that for a while and that did not augur well. It did not go well at all. And eventually I wanted to reclaim space for myself after that visit with the doctor. And I said, okay, I need to do something about this. I'm not happy and I need to find my mojo. And so then the thing that got me back to my thinking brain was, funnily, like I mentioned at the beginning, was exercise. And I started exercising regularly, which I didn't do before because I was just, you know, doing something with the kids or at home or completely off balance. And then I started taking pictures of the girls at school for events and here and there for my friends, their kids' birthday parties. And then I wanted to go to school. I was like, I want to go back to school and I want to study this and I want to be a photographer. And didn't have enough money or babysitter. So I was like, I can do what I did before. I can do evening classes, you know, what I did long ago when I was working with my father. And anyway, so I enrolled at the School of Visual Arts. I know you're from there. And I studied at the continuing education department. And I picked and chose whatever I wanted to do. And I brushed up my skills. And by that time, I was convinced I wanted to do project-based work. And yeah, that's my short synopsis of my journey. And it's funny because as a child, my color pencils were my best friends. I used to collect all sorts of materials from the art shop. My pocket money was mostly buying art materials and music. And I was always in the school choir and the dramatics team. And this continued throughout my undergrad days and my postgraduate days where I was actively involved in creative pursuits. But, you know, at some point I was like, now it's time to go out there and be serious and earn money, and not little realizing that my heart was never in those other things. It took me a while to come back to the thing that my heart was in. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Oh my gosh. It's really beautiful and really inspiring. And I appreciate your transparency of it's not always a linear journey. In fact, most times it's not a linear journey. But what I think is so amazing about your journey and like I admire so much is that you found a way, even though it was challenging, you found a way to pursue what it was that you really wanted to do with your life. And it takes so much courage. It's, I'm sure it felt like a, did it feel like a leap of faith to you at the time?
Yes. I have to say yes. I had to, I can't tell you how difficult it was. It was, first of all, I think what happens is that when you stay home for that long, because I was home for, I think, 7 years before I finally started going out to do things, you get so enmeshed in your everyday life, in this role that you are slotted into. It's very difficult to then carve the space to say, I am going to claim this time for myself. Just to get over that took me a while psychologically to say that I am worthy of this, that I need this, and I am important. Because there was a time when I was not important to me. And I think just to become important to myself, because it was so essential for my survival, for my growth and my joy, I had to accept that. And that was, I think that was the hardest part. And then after that, you know, I did the Artist Way course, and it's a course by Julia Cameron, in case anybody listening is wondering. And it's a 12-week program that guides you through creative recovery. And there's one, I don't know which week, where she asks you, what is your true north? And I'm doing the course by now. I've been writing a few weeks, I think. And I write, I want to be an artist. And that's when I knew that, yes, I am a photographer. And yes, I do work for hire. But what I really want is to be an artist. And once I had that clarity, then everything just, yeah, everything was still difficult, but became easier, I guess.
Oh, I love that. I mean, I literally am getting chills as you're talking about this. Oh. Because it's just such a... It's such a beautiful thing. And, you know, we were talking about at the beginning of this episode, and even before we started recording, how taking time for yourself on a day-to-day basis, implementing strategies that are going to help strengthen your mindset and all of that is ultimately an act of self-love and an act of self-preservation. And for you, making that decision to reclaim that part of your life and to, you know, like be honest with yourself and say, this is what I want, like to declare that you wanted to become an artist and that's what you wanted to do with your life is a huge act of self-love and self-preservation. It's like the ultimate act of living in your like stepping into your truth and really empowering, and I'm sure a mix of emotions and also maybe scary in some ways, but I just think it's so incredible because there's a lot of people who might not ever make that. It might stay as a sort of a secret dream for them. They might not feel that they can actually step out and declare that and make that happen and bring that dream to fruition. I think it's just so incredible and powerful that you did.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the reason there's also like when I was thinking about all these things, and you know, because the book, it guides you through these questions, they're very difficult questions with, you know, she makes you think about your childhood and all of these things that happened with you. And it just became very essential for me to talk about these things because there are so many people who probably share what I have felt. And whenever I found myself in front of art and looking at the lives of artists, they were my champions. They were my heroes because, you know, here they are talking about these difficult things that we all feel but can't say. And I wanted to be that person, you know, and I want to mention that my work is about being a woman and about relearning who I am. And I know we talked about claiming space, and the way I see it is my work is about reclaiming space for myself after losing it to motherhood. And I talk about this within the framework of my life as a carer and my relationship with my two daughters, you know, who I'm very close to because they were my only companions when we moved here, really. And because my husband was really busy in his job. And I didn't have anybody that I knew, really. And everybody that I knew, I mean, like few, like the couple of people that I knew, and it's not their fault, were consumed with their own lives. But yeah, I grew up in a place where being a girl was second rate. And although my parents wanted me to feel like I'm no less, there were subtleties I couldn't ignore. You know, the environment at large is very important. The group of people that surround you, I think I probably am repeating this. I'm just trying to contextualize it that I was informed by these other things that were happening around me. And you know when you're disparaged for your gender or who you are, you know, essentially. And the worst thing was that I didn't feel safe when I stepped out of my house. You know, Delhi is still quite notorious for being unsafe for women. So when I became a mother to my girls, I became interested in making work that put girls and women center stage. You know, I was like, I became concerned. When I started becoming concerned for their safety, then I was led to reflect on my own life. It's funny how that happens where, you know, you're doing this and I didn't expect it. It just hit me out of nowhere. I was like, wait a second. But my life was so different and oh, I felt all these things. And there's all this processing that took place a few years ago. So in my pictures, we're important. You know, the girls are important. Women are important. What we want is important. And I can talk about anything I want that bothers me. And even if the world doesn't care. And I get to speak my mind and I claim space for myself and my feelings. And I get to portray my daughters as strong and fierce or gentle and dreamy. I get to show myself as strong or weak, as tired or emboldened. And I get to decide to be anything I want. And so for me, making pictures is an act of resistance. I make my own dimension and my own world. And it's very contrary to how I grew up. You know, being told what to do and how to behave. So yeah, that's essentially how my past has come to define what I do and why I'm here, why I do what I do.
So amazing. I mean, hearing you talk about your work, and of course, I'm familiar with your work. I've seen your beautiful photographs and they're so powerful. And you really feel like that female energy and that the women and the girls are center stage. And I think it just reminds me that's one of the most powerful things about the creative process and about being an artist, whether you are a painter or a photographer or whatever kind of work you do, you get to create your own world where you get to sort of like mm-hmm. take back the narrative and like create a new narrative. And
yes,
it's, you have this, I don't know, I don't want to say control, but yeah, you have like, you get to decide, you get to make decisions that empower you and that make you feel good and also bring to light topics that, you know, I think for you focusing in on women and especially with your background and growing up the way that you did, where you felt like women were second rate, getting to now create a world where women are empowered and the girls are empowered or however you want to depict them, but you get to choose.
Yes.
That's the most important thing. That's the most beautiful thing.
Yes, I didn't know this though, you know, it's funny how it works mm-hmm. when you start making the work, and I'm sure you're familiar. I think we've talked about it in one of the sessions in the online mm-hmm. community that essentially we could be doing two things, right? Like one is you have these visions and you have this idea and you have this overwhelming emotion and it comes out. If you're a painter, it'll come out in your canvas, if, you know, and I'm a photographer for me. I am drawn to taking the pictures and staging the pictures that I imagine in my mind. And then later I'm like, wait, what does this mean? And very often it takes me a while. Like I have to come back to it, you know, after a few months. In fact, sometimes I'll do the work and I won't look at it. You know, I'll put it into my Lightroom. It'll be there for a while, you know, after a few, sometimes it's weeks, sometimes it's months. And I don't like being rushed because it's funny also how the work changes for you. I don't know if you've ever felt this way. I really am interested to know that when I'm making something, it means something for me. And when after I look at it after some time, the dimensions just open up like, wow, it all starts to make sense. Everything that I had been thinking or feeling, seeing, you know, like you go and see other art and you do all these things. And then you look at this work that you make and you look at it and you say, oh boy, this is so much more than what I had first thought it is. And I love that. I love having that distance with the work because it just opens up. And so I've been making work, right? And sometimes it's quite intentional. Like, this is what I really want to say. And then I go in and I stage it and I do it and it's done. And then when the distance comes in, like it has now for a lot of the work that I've made, it's easier to see. It strikes me when I'm swimming, just listening to the sound of my breath. Oh, wait, this is what's happening here, you know? And it's not like I knew from before that I definitely knew that I wanted to tell my stories, that I wanted to claim space for myself. But how I was doing it was revealed to me later. And I wanted to share this because I feel like sometimes when we're in the process, you know, because I also work with artists, we're so hard on ourselves when we don't see it becoming in front of us. But I think that takes time to kind of even know, even within yourself, what's happening. I think that takes time.
Absolutely. It's such a process because also it changes. Like sometimes you start out with a clear idea of the kind of work you want to make and what it is you want to say. And then that changes as well. And it's like accepting that and allowing room for that. And I think that having distance between you and your work is such an important thing because when you're so close to it, you can't see it anymore. You know, it's like a classic case of you can't see, what is it, the forest through the trees, like that analogy of just when you're in it and there's no separation, it's just hard to fully understand like what it is you're creating, what you want to say, what the work is about, what it means to you. When you have that space, and also I think when you can look at the work as a whole versus individual pieces, but when you can actually see the work together, then you have those moments. For me, it's like when that happens more when I see a collection of my paintings together, even if they're just laid out on the floor versus like one at a time. I have those moments too. And you know, it's such the creative process, it's such a beautiful thing. Everything that you're sharing hits so close to home for me. Like I was painting last night. I had no idea what I wanted to paint. I just thought, I haven't painted in a while. And I feel like I just need to do this right now, but I'm not going to put any expectations on whether I actually produce something or not. And it was so funny because I was painting for maybe an hour and I was trying something and then wiping it away and trying something else and wiping it away and just like seeing like what it was I even wanted to make. And maybe like an hour and a half in, I was like, I want to paint a willow tree. That just feels right. That feels exactly how I'm feeling right now. Like I could not get this image of the willow tree out of my head. And I can't even explain it. It sounds like such a simple thing. But when I had that realization, it was like, I knew that that was exactly what I needed to paint, what I needed to make in that moment. And I connected with it in such a way where it's hard to even articulate or put it into words, right? It's like you're trying to talk about it and you're like,
I completely feel you. You have to honor that feeling though, right? You have to honor that feeling that comes from inside of you and trust it, really trust it.
Yes, yes, you trust it. And also, to give yourself the time and the space. So I had that realization, but it came at the very, very end of about an hour and a half of art making. And I wasn't about to start making it in that moment because it was getting very late and I was getting tired. But I thought, let me just hold this here and revisit this in a few days and maybe just do a little sketch of what this might look like or how I would, you know, composition, that kind of thing. But the beautiful thing that I took away from that was you never know when you go into the creative process, unless you are, I mean, some artists, they work representationally and they do have a very clear idea at the beginning. But I think for many of us, even if we have that clear idea of what it is we want to make, it oftentimes changes. And you don't really know until you actually start making the work. You get in there, you dive into the process. And I think it's just kind of like allowing whatever is meant to come forth to come forth, and accepting that you don't have all the answers right away. Like, there's just part of, I think that's the beauty of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Uncharted. Sometimes, you know, you're just going into it, trusting that you're going to get out, you know, you go into this space and you hope that you get out of the other side. Yes. Sometimes that's how it feels to me. I start and I'm so anxious. And yeah, I don't know who I was telling yesterday. I was like, you know, when I have to make something, I know it because I start feeling like I'm sick.
You know,
I don't know if anybody else feels this. I feel sick. I'm going to throw up if I don't make this. And I'm like pacing around the house and being ridiculous. And my kids are like, what is wrong with you, mom? And I'm like, I don't know. Well, yeah, I know. It's because I need to be making pictures, not cooking food.
Yes. But this is so true. And this is, you know, Beth Pickens talks about this. Danielle Krissa has spoken about this, that if you are an artist, you're not okay when you're not making the art. For me, I can go actually a couple of weeks without picking up a paintbrush. But what happens is that I start to feel, by the end of that, like, let's say 2 week period, I get very pent up. So it's not necessarily that I feel it every day that I'm not painting, but after a week or two, I start to feel it as well. And it manifests so differently for everyone. For me, it feels like I have this like release that is stuck that I need to just get out. And I think the most beautiful thing, or like one of the most beautiful things about making the work and the creative process, is like, it's a time where you can, you know, you spoke about flow, getting into that flow. And we've, so much of this conversation is about reclaiming time and space. And for me, when I quiet everything, I don't even listen to music sometimes when I'm making my work. It's just totally quiet. I can really process and think. And I think that's why last night I came to that realization of, oh, this is what I'm meant to make right now. You know, this feels right, because you're just so in tune with yourself and your creativity, and there's nothing distracting you. It's like, I don't know, there's a beautiful sense of clarity, I think, that comes through that process.
Yeah, agree. Silence is golden, someone has said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. That sounds beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, well, and I didn't want to forget to ask you, because as you're sharing about your work and your journey as an artist and how it's evolved, I wanted to just learn a little bit more about the Mother Creatrix Collective, and if you could tell us about that journey and how that's evolving.
Yeah. Well, that was like the best thing that's happened to me. I love my friends. So the Mother Creatrix Collective is, at the moment, we're six artists. Kim Hobson, Jocelyn Russell, Caroline McAuliffe, Nina Wood, and Alison Belolan. Alison is in Westchester. Nina is in Long Island. Caroline and Kim are in Brooklyn, and Jocelyn is in Upper Manhattan, and I am also Upper Manhattan. And we met, the three of us, Kim, Jocelyn, and I, had a meeting at the Metropolitan Museum of Art a couple of years ago. And we were doing we were members of this network called Thrive Together Network. We did like a local, let's do a local meetup. And the three of us show up to the Met. And we're talking about, you know, the joys and the lows of motherhood and art making, balancing, mostly complaining to each other about how hard it is to get our work out there, to even make the work to begin with sometimes. And we followed that up. Oh, and at that meeting, we're like, hey, we should do a show together. Yeah, we should do a show together. Let's do this. We followed up with a meeting in my house on my dining table. And while we're proposing which artists to invite for this show that we're going to propose, and which is the other ladies I've named. And at that time, we also had lovely Stephanie Eck and, my gosh, Courtney's last name in the moment. I blame it on my proper noun dysfunction. But we thought we should have a collective, basically, net-net. And we decided to call it the Mother Creatrix Collective. And the mission of our collective initially has been that we will support one another to create exhibition opportunities. So we write proposals and we approach community spaces and galleries that will support artist mothers in their endeavors to show and exhibit. And how it's grown over the couple of years has been so beautiful, because working with one another has been almost been seamless. It's not like we have made lists and beat up tasks, and we do all that stuff when we have to make a proposal and put up a show and take it down. And everybody is ready to jump in, meaning people just jump in and fill in the spaces whenever there is anybody having an issue at home with the kids, something's going on. And we really are trying to make a space here for between us where we're working on the ethics of care and cooperation instead of competition. And that's what we really hope for women and for artists, and to be able to carry each other, you know, and support one another and even help one another. When you have a solo, we can help you make that proposal, or, you know, you have a thought for an exhibition, let's go with it, you know, so kind of doing that. And we have a show coming up in collaboration with the Old Stone House of Brooklyn. In March 24th is the opening. We would love to see anybody who can make it. The exhibition is called Mama Needs a Raise, and it's been curated by Catherine Gressel, who's the curator for contemporary art at the Old Stone House, and Jocelyn Kim and myself. And what we're thinking with this exhibition, we're asking artist caregivers, what do you need and want most? What changes can we see in the system? Or what would you like to make this a utopian experience for you? Meaning, what do you really want as an artist and a caregiver? And yeah, we have our MCC members showing, and we have about, I think 10 other artists whose work is going to be up. I think it's going to be a great show. So please come one, come all. It's the opening reception is March 24th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Old Stone House of Brooklyn.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, you know, I will be there, and
yes,
I have.
I'm excited. Yes,
I'm so excited about all that you're doing. I mean, I remember when the group formed, Mother Creatrix Collective formed. And I was so excited then, because I thought, what an incredible mission, you know, these artist mothers coming together and creating their own opportunities. And you've had numerous shows now. Like,
yes.
I had the privilege of, where was it? Going to Compare Collective.
Yes. Time Space. Yes.
Time Space. And then also attending the artist talk there, which was so powerful. And there were so many nuggets of wisdom that I still remember to this day, just things that topics you were speaking about and your own perspectives on those topics relating to motherhood and just navigating that journey as a mother, as an artist. So I'm very excited for the show. And of course, we will, you know, be sure to share the info on our social media platforms,
yes,
and in
please.
Our journey as well.
That would be great.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the last questions I have for you is, since you started the Mother, or since you, yeah, started the Mother Creatrix Collective, I know you all came together and sort of created it. How has that work impacted you and your art? Has there been a connection there?
That's a very interesting question. Wow. I've never really thought about it. Mm-hmm. I have felt, but yes, on an emotional and level, I think each one of us has felt very supported and seen. And whenever I have any issues that I need to have, you know, about art making, that I need even critique, right? I will contact one of my cohort and say, hey, can you help me? can you help me iron this thing out? So creatively, I think it's really helpful, because we have each other as soundboards. And it's been very nice to have this kind of voice. You know, I often talk to Nina, whose kids are, you know, older. It's interesting because we are at different stages of, you know, our children are of different ages. So Nina's like the wise one. Her children are adults. She's seen it all. And Kim and Caroline's kids are so little. So they keep us grounded and humble and reminded, you know, of the how much grunt work is involved in raising a child. And, you know, so it feels in my heart, I just feel really supported. And I feel like I found my tribe. And I think that has made me feel calmer and more secure. And I think that I think is what has impacted my life since we formed the collective. I really have, knock on wood, the best friends. They're so sweet and they're all so loving and caring and kind. Yeah. In this really volatile world, we somehow have found this, you know, and I hope this never changes, you know, just this space where we can feel seen and heard.
So important to have that. And I'm so grateful that you found that. And I can feel the connection between all of you. And it was so apparent when I, you know, came to the artist talk and yeah, just the connection you all had. And it's, I mean, we've spoken so much at length about community and this season in particular on the podcast, and community can look like so many different things. It can be having just a couple of people, like fellow artists or creatives that you surround yourself with. It could be being part of a larger community as well, but having a tribe of, you know, how many are there of you in total? Six or?
We are six. Yes. Six. At the moment, yes. We're six. Yeah.
So having five other artists around you who are like sharing the same experiences that you are also like experiencing. It's such a powerful thing. And I'm so happy because we can only grow so much individually. And when we are when we feel supported, when we feel seen, it's so much easier, I think, to like allow ourselves to kind of soar creatively and to take those risks or just to step out a little bit more because we feel safe. And I think you have to feel that sense of safety to really be able to propel forward in your creative work.
The things that we can do together, maybe we couldn't have done alone.
Yeah.
You know, like we get together and we make these proposals, the times that we have made these proposals. And I imagine if I did that alone, it would be so much work. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, and also it gives you confidence when you're working with other artists. It feels like, yeah, you know, should we say this? Yeah, we should say this. No, we should say that. You know, like it's just very collaborative. And I feel that also gives us a sense of, like they say, you know, in Hindi, there's a saying which says that if you're just a finger, you're all alone. But when you close your fist, you're stronger. I don't know how to translate it directly, but what it means is you're always stronger when you're supported, when you're in a group, when there's people who have your back. Unity, I think, something like that. Power and unity, something like that. Anyway, I'm not one for it, and I'm not one for remembering. I always forget them when there's a chance to say it. I'm like, oh, wait, what was that saying again? Anyway.
No, the message is coming through. I mean,
okay,
we're
good.
We're stronger together. Yeah. We're in this together. You know, I've always shared, like, anytime I've gone through difficult experiences in my life, the hardest part was feeling alone. That was actually harder sometimes than the actual experience.
Like
was the loneliness or the isolation. So when you are together, when you are in community with fellow artists, with, you know, people who are sharing a similar experience, it is, I think, like the most powerful thing in the world, truly. Yeah. Like I'm so passionate about it. And I think that every single artist deserves that and deserves to feel supported and seen. So for anyone listening, if you are feeling like you're ready to find your community, you know, this is a good year to do that. And sometimes it is actively making an effort to go out and find people, because I thought for the longest time that it would just happen to me. And then I was like, oh, wait, I need to go find my tribe. I need to make an effort to connect with others and actually like find my people. And I did, but it, you know, it was like coming to that realization too was an important one.
Yeah. I think you have to do that. You do have to It's like my mother would say, you can't sit by the beach and wait for the water to come wash your feet. Yes. You got to go to the ocean. Go to it. Yes.
Go to the ocean. And truly, yeah. Even if it's a small group, I mean, it's not about the size of the community or the group. It's just having like surrounding yourself with people that support you and believe in you. And, you know, you said feeling seen. I think that's such an important thing.
Yes.
To feel like you are not, because I think when you feel alone, if you feel disconnected or invisible, it does take a toll on your work as a creative and as an artist, you know, like you might not even be fully aware of it. I often share how my art, my creative practice suffered for years. And now I can see very clearly it was because I was isolated and I was so disconnected from an art community. So it has, yeah, it definitely makes a huge difference.
Yeah, but I agree.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well, Shweta, I want to thank you so much. This was like such a I feel so grounded and calm and inspired right
me
now.
Me too. Me too. It's just such a joy to speak to you every time and hear from you every time. I was telling Victoria how she sounds beautiful on her podcast. And you're like listening to a guru. You're like a, yeah, just the outfit is different from my Indian guru style, but
that's like a guru. A huge compliment. Thank you. I mean, I will, that just made my day, honestly. And you do too. And you just have such beautiful words of wisdom to share. And thank you so much. Like, this has been an incredible conversation.
Thank you. And it's been great to be here. I do want to mention one thing before I sign off, if that's okay.
Of course.
So I've contributed an essay to this beautiful book that's coming out this month sometime. It's called Give and Take, Motherhood and Creative Practice. And it explores the diverse ways contemporary artists navigate the duality of the roles of artists and mothers. It's got beautiful essays from 33 contributors. And if I would, you know, if anybody's interested in having a look at how artist mothers navigate these roles and this life and make work or time or don't or make look into acquiring the book. It's on Demeter Press's website, demeterpress.org.
Amazing. That's such a great opportunity. And we can include the link in the show notes please. As well.
That would be wonderful.
Incredible. Thank you so much, Shweta. And again, such a joy to have you. And for everyone that's tuning in, thank you again. And we will see you next time. Thank you for tuning in and supporting our platform. To learn more about New Visionary Magazine, head over to visionaryartcollective.com/magazine. You can order individual copies on Amazon or subscribe annually to digital issues. We also have opportunities to get featured in the magazine, so be sure to join our newsletter and follow us on Instagram. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to leave a review on iTunes or tag us on Instagram. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.